Hi everyone, we have Tumul with us today. We are going to understand his entrepreneurial journey right out of DJ, moving on to Stupid Sid and now to Yokit. This is definitely an interesting conversation and let's hop onto it.
Big fan of Stupid Sid. I must say I used it a lot. So directly wanted to jump to that, right? Like, how did you guys come up with the idea of Stupid Sid and how did it start? Because when we joined DJ, it was already existing and it was a great resource, very well organized. We could see a lot of resources about colleges, papers and everything on the site. So how did you start with that idea?
Hi guys, thanks for having me. And Tapan, you are very kind when you say these things, so thank you for that. Talking about Stupid Sid, so this thing started when I was in third year of engineering, DJ Sanghvi Electronics and Telecom. So, you know, a bunch of guys were sort of trying to do something, sort of disillusioned with the whole engineering, you know, not to sound cliche, but that was the case. So, you know, when you guys also got into engineering, or, you know, when we got into engineering, so there was a phase after 12th standard in, you know, when we were kind of clueless. Maybe we were a bit less clueless because, you know, say, of our marks and because of maybe our exposure to different people and, you know, within friends and family. But, you know, a lot of people were really struggling with the whole process. As well as with what college to go for. So, you know, it's likely that you would have friends in a couple of colleges. But, you know, to get an idea of the whole spectrum, basis your marks, was a challenge. That's when we started. So college review, you know, was the first thing that we started with. And we were kind of brutally honest about what we put in these reviews. Which I think gave us the initial, you know, sort of popularity through word of mouth. And then, you know, afterwards, it since that picked up, you know, that sort of motivated us to do more. And the next biggest challenge was, you know, finding good resources for studying. So this kind of a hack, which was really popular among all the engineering students, I'm sure it still is today. But, you know, that's just go through the previous year's question papers and, you know, you will be sorted. At least you will score the, you know, the bare minimum. So that was there in most of the college libraries, but not available online anywhere. So we put those up first for Mumbai University and then for a few others like, you know, the Pune, the Bangalore, all of those. And that really picked up. By the time this happened, you know, we were through with the college. And some of us had sort of secured, you know, an admit in US. Some of us had an MBA admit in hand. And some of us were like, keen to go for a job right away. So, you know, then it boiled down to just five of us who thought of continuing this ahead. And, you know, that's how the journey started.
When you started growing, like, right, like, how was that feeling, right? Like, this was the early days of the internet, especially in, like, India, right, where maybe people were on Facebook, like huge communities, right? How was that growth like? And how did you, how was that feeling basically, right? Like seeing thousands of, or maybe more than like tens of thousands of visits every month or every day?
Yeah. I think when you say early days of internet, you make me sound like an uncle. That was not the case.
I mean, that was only like 8 years or 10 years ago, right? Like early days, internet is so fast. When I say early days, it's still hardly a decade. Yeah.
True. Yeah, I think 3G came in just when we were in the final year. I think Android came in at that time. Facebook also in second or third year. So yeah, in that terms, yeah. But you know, the growth was something which actually sort of motivated us to keep going. Because initially, you know, when I see kids these days, like, in, again, I am making myself sound like an uncle, but you know, the students in currently in third and fourth year, they are you know, so aware of the things. They've already taken like you know, 3-4 internships, and they know what to do. Some of them already have started something. So you know, compared to that, you know, we were really naive when it comes to, you know, making this into a scalable business model. So you know, we were seeing good traction on website. And that was really motivating, that, you know, kept us going for more and more, despite the fact that, you know, there were hardly any revenue coming in the initial, say, 1-1.5 years. Yeah, so I think that answers your question. So how did that feel like? And I remember, you know, there was this MHT CET, which used to happen. Right now it's JE. So, you know, that was a government website, and that used to be really slow. So, and when the results used to come, so, you know, everyone used to be on there, that website. So what we did was, we figured out some way to put that thing as a widget on StupidSid. So, you know, small hacks like this really gave us the numbers. So, you know, like on an average, I think, the numbers used to be, say, around higher 3 digits, but when the result thing happened, it suddenly went into 5 digits. So
right.
That was like a really huge rush.
Wow. So being early entrepreneur and still while you're building your business, figuring out the revenue model, figuring out what the business model would look like, and without any formal MBA or business education, how did you guys go about scaling it and sustaining it for so many years?
Okay. I think one key thing here is perseverance. So we did not have, or we don't have, a formal MBA, but you know, the job teaches you so much. That's I think it's equivalent to that, definitely. Maybe we took slightly longer to learn those things, and maybe we learned it the hard way, but you know, the job was equivalent to an MBA or maybe more than that. So scaling happened, you know, so we were like 1 or 2 years into it, with no major source of revenue. That's when, you know, we really started thinking that, you know, is this something that we are enjoying? Yes, all of us, yes. And do we see a future in this? It's an internet thing. It's picking up. Definitely, we are seeing the numbers. Only thing is that we are not seeing the revenue. So, you know, then you know, these were the signals that, you know, we should continue. Just that the business model was something that needs to be figured out. Early on, you know, there used to be a business model from domestic market itself. But, you know, that wasn't something which we could see to scale. It could either be because we were kind of early in that space, or, you know, we were not great with the execution. But whatever be the case, you know, we were trying to scale it up, but it wasn't happening. And there was a section for studying abroad specifically on StupidSid, which was, you know, that section alone was doing as good as the rest of all the sections combined. So I think we thought that, you know, let's give it a shot separately as a separate brand. So, you know, that's when Yokit branched out of StupidSid, and, you know, and then it really picked up. Because it was a different space, and you know, we were kind of starting with a fresh mindset. Plus, we had a backup of StupidSid. So, you know, say most people on StupidSid were engineers, and I'm sure half of them were really keen to study abroad. So that gave us a head start. And then, you know, Yokit really picked up, and then we could really scale it faster.
Mm-hmm.
So the founders for Yocket and Stupidsert are same. How many like founders are there? Like how many of you are working together, like on the site?
Yeah. So there are three founders right now. When we started in college, you know, when it was not a formal entity, that time there were a lot of us. But then, yeah. You know, as I told you, many people branched out. Right now, there are three of us.
Yeah. So how did you decide that I don't want to pursue a master or don't want to do a full-time job? I want to continue doing this, because like when a lot of people start a business, and not a business, but something, a website or something, when they're doing engineering, but they stop right after graduation. So what made you go through, like continue doing this?
Mm-hmm. I can speak for myself, not sure about the other guys, but personally, I was really fed up of studying. I hardly scored like 56 or something, 56% in engineering. And clearly a technical master was not something for me. I was not sure what would an MBA entail, right? So I had a job offer in hand, but as we had already like 1 year into it alongside the college. I thought, it's a good idea to give it a shot. And fortunately, there was no pressure from home to immediately earn. So that kind of, so then it was an easy choice that, it's no harm giving 1 year or 2 years. And if it doesn't work out, okay, we'll figure out something, no issues.
Absolutely. I think I kind of relate to what Tomal is saying here. Oftentimes, like when we have our peers, especially from DJ, like most of them being in the US, making six-figure, seven-figure salaries out there. And then you kind of look at the hard life, like entrepreneurial life. It looks glamorous at some point, but it's definitely like a lot of work that you put in, a lot of hours. And not always are you getting the same revenue out of it or like the same appreciation out of it. And in spite of that, the perseverance, like you mentioned, I think that makes you going, and it's a rare gene pool, I would say.
No, I think you rightly said that it does look glamorous from the outside, but it isn't. And that is something I think people who want to get into entrepreneurship should be, aware of that. If you want to get into an entrepreneurship for the heck of it, or for the glamour of it, or for the freedom of it, then sorry, boss, that's not how it's going to be. If you genuinely have an idea, or if you genuinely think you want to solve some problem, then yeah, come on board.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people say like, I'm fed up my 9 to 5 and I need more freedom. But as an entrepreneur, I know it's more of like 7 to 12. There is no freedom. You're technically adding more hours in your life.
Yeah, yeah. I think more than the hours, it's the constant fight, right? And if you're working for someone, at least, there is someone to look up to. In this case, that's not the case. So it's a constant struggle to keep afloat, especially if you are bootstrapped. So, survival and keeping afloat is the always, a constant pressure. And even if you're funded, the whole pressure of growing, scaling is always going to be there.
So are you guys still bootstrapped, or are you VC funded, or do you have investors?
Yeah. So this year we got investment from a company which is backed by Sequoia and Jungle. Won't be able to disclose the name right now. We can discuss that later. Seen both the sides, been bootstrapped for the first 10 years, and then since past 6 months, we have invested, funded.
Congratulations on raising the funding.
Yeah, thank you.
If you had to maybe point out few decisions that you've made across like Stupidsert and the Yocket journey, what were those decision points? If you didn't make that decisions, you wouldn't be where you are.
For Stupidsert, I think adding the whole study resources was a big thing. It was very early in the stage, so that is still giving us a lot of traction. The work that we did, say from 2011 to 2017, is we stopped focusing too much on Stupidsert post 2017-18. But you know, even after like 3-4 years, it's still getting us a lot of traffic. So that's definitely one thing. Second was, you know, of course, decision to start Yokit, and eventually, so you know, in the initial year and a half of Yokit, we used to focus on both the things, Yokit as well as Stupidsell. But then we realized that, you know, it's not really feasible to focus on both. So, you know, starting Yokit and then stopping the, you know, focus on Stupidsell, that is something which is, I think, very important. And another thing but which we recently started in 2019 was Yokit Premium. So that's a major revenue source right now. And, you know, had we sort of not started it, you know, maybe we wouldn't have seen through the pandemic.
What does Yokit Premium like provide?
In its most basic form, it's a counseling service, like similar to any other counselor. But what's different here is it's a tech-based product, and you know, it does not allow the individual counselor bias to creep in. So the university suggestions happen basis the data that we have. So, you know, it's been like 6 years of Yokit and, you know, a couple of more years with Stupidsell. So we have gathered like close to 1 million data points from the student, you know, for their admits and rejects. And basis that, you know, we match the student's profile and try to suggest a university list. So, and of course, then on top of that, counselor, you know, uses that list and tries to add their own wisdom to that and then fine-tune the list for them. But it's a tech-based product. Students do have a dashboard which they can, you know, use to sort of track their application, upload their documents for counselors to check, schedule calls with counselors. So that's how it's different. And second thing is it's completely online. So, you know, it's more accessible to more people.
So you mentioned a word called counselor bias. Would you want to elaborate like how an automated, probably data science or ML driven platform would be better than an in-person approach that most counselors have nowadays?
Two things here. One, you know, counselors have limited knowledge, right? Even if they know about, say, 500 universities, it's still limited. There are like 10,000 universities out there across different countries. Generally, counselors specialize in one particular country. Since I think fall 20, that's last intake, a lot of people have, you know, started applying to multiple countries and then going with the best admit, not with the, you know, the best country per se. So, you know, counselors' knowledge is limited basis their past experience. And so that's the first thing that gets eliminated when, you know, you have the whole data set available to the algorithm. And then, you know, that gives the initial list to the counselor. And then, of course, counselors' experience, their wisdom plays an important role to fine-tune that list. Second, you know, lot of universities, maybe not in US, but in markets like UK, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, you know, they work on a very different model for their recruitment, which is, you know, they don't get students directly coming to them, but they always have certain agents who route these students to them, which is fine in itself. But, you know, when agents sort of are not transparent with the student that, you know, we are incentivized by this university and hence we are sending you there instead of the other choice that you want, that causes the issue. And, you know, a lot of times students get sort of wrong advice, or, you know, they even get pushed to a university where they don't really go. Maybe they could have made it to slightly a better university, but, you know, counselor sort of pushed them to a certain university. So that again gets eliminated when, you know, it's all algorithmized.
what was the pandemic like for you guys? Did you see a lot of traffic coming in to the platform because more and more people are getting more comfortable using online tools? And also, like, how did you navigate all the work from home and other, you know, maybe you got other services got impacted?
Yeah, so we definitely saw an increase in traffic. Unfortunately, that did not, really convert into business. Because, you know, people were really keen to know more about the university, about upskilling themselves. But it was not really possible to fly at that time. Moreover, finances were in trouble for a lot of people. So, you know, they were curious at that point. And, some of them, yes, did eventually go. But we saw a huge increase in traffic. And work from home was quite easy. It took like 6-7 weeks to get used to. But the thing for us was, we were always online, even before the pandemic. So even before Yocket Premium started, it was just a platform. So people were, of course, working from office. But there were no meeting with students as such required. So that was not that big a challenge. Challenge was definitely to sail through that period when, business was taking a hit.
If you had to like point out some outliers that you noticed based on like what students are applying for or what kind of pattern change you've seen from like 2011 to 2021 in terms of abroad education, what are like some of the few, like what are the highlights that you want to point out?
Most important, US was the biggest market earlier, which is not the case right now. The absolute numbers for US has increased, but in percentage share, it has sort of dropped to, I think, second or third place. Canada has overtaken that by leaps and bounds. I think this happened in 2018. Before that, the US used to be number, I think, the Trump effect, obviously. And so that's one major thing. Second, overall numbers have increased a lot. And earlier, I think a lot of people from metros used to go for study abroad. A lot of people used to think that, it's only for the rich kids. But that has changed a bit. There is some more exposure than earlier. There's more accessibility to finances. So that has, changed. Third thing, I think people have started applying to multiple destinations. They don't start the journey with one destination in mind. They take their chances with at least 2 to 3 destinations, and then basis the admits that they get, they make the final call. And last thing is, I think a lot of engineers have started going into sort of managerial or finance or even non-STEM programs. So, yeah, I think these four are some key highlights.
Has there been any change in your approach, like while you were bootstrapping it to now having a funded company? Are there like some goals and plans that you all were able to now put into action because of the funding?
Absolutely, absolutely. For two things. So I think there is definitely a change in the approach because of the funding itself and because of, the mentors that we have got, which happened due to funding. And a constant interaction with them has also sort of really helped me fine-tune our approaches. So the major change has been we've got a lot more analytical as an organization. Earlier, we used to sort of work more on the basis of hunch or hypothesis, but now we are tracking a lot of things and testing the hypothesis against data. That's one thing. Second is definitely the pace has like changed tremendously. If I think that what I used to do in, say, December or January last year, I feel like I was just chilling. not really working, like working like 3-4 hours a day and then chilling, which has really changed. So and really thoroughly enjoying that part. So, you know, team has also grown like 3x in 6 months.
Cool. Any piece of advice you would like to share with students aspiring to study abroad?
I think I might not be the best person to advise. I'm more of a person who can advise on startups and entrepreneurship, but I'm not someone who has done studying abroad themselves. So, you know, if I say something right now on the podcast, it would be sort of not really genuine. I think you guys would be better placed to do that.
Okay, let me switch up the question then. Any major learnings during your entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah, tons of them. It's hard, of course. We already discussed this. It's hard. But it's also rewarding. Don't get into it if you don't have an idea and if you're just attracted by the idea of entrepreneurship. So that's one thing. In terms of learning, so I think when you're working for someone, you know, you are accountable to say your job, your manager. But when you're an entrepreneur, you are, accountable to a lot more stakeholders. So, you know, be ready for that. You're accountable to your co-founders. You're accountable to your employees. You're accountable to the clients. You are accountable to the people who are using your product. So that's one thing. Apart from that, I think, it's going to be a really a journey with full of ups and downs. So, again, be ready for that.
Right. So do you have like a support system that you rely on during, downtimes? What are some methods or techniques that people can, other entrepreneurs or even like just someone who's going through a difficult time to keep them motivated?
I've been really fortunate to get like a great set of co-founders. So, we're three of us. So, when one of us is down, so, chances are that other two would be there for them. But in case of, solopreneurs, that really becomes a challenge. So, some hobby or maybe just taking out some time away from that would help. But I think most importantly, I earlier said that perseverance is something which you should have and which personally worked for us. But there may be a time when you should realistically check if it's not working. Then calling it off at a decent time is also something people should consider.
Yeah, I think that's like the toughest thing to do, right? Calling it quits and just accepting the sunk cost, not putting good money after bad.
So, Tumal, you definitely gave us good insights about entrepreneurship journey, and you spoke about the learnings that you had throughout. But what were some of the setbacks that you have seen in your living your entrepreneurial journey, and what have you all done to kind of overcome those?
Right. I think one major setback or sort of shortcoming was, we were not able to scale the revenue with StupidSid. And that went on like for a good, I think for first one and a half year, we were not really focused on that. But even after getting focused on that, we were not really able to crack it. So we were getting like lakhs of user every month on the platform and still weren't able to crack the monetization. And that went on for like quite some time, say 2 to 3 years. So that was a major thing. We cracked it by pivoting to Yokit. I think another major setback was during the pandemic. So, you know, that time, you know, universities were not really keen on doing any marketing. They didn't really have any budgets and all of those things. So, you know, we started offering them free sessions on Yokit, which acted in a dual way. So universities came because we had students, but because universities came, we got a lot more students also on board. So I think these two were challenges. I think if I were to redo the whole COVID phase, I think I would be really scared. That would be a big nightmare.
So now there is a section called top three. So what we essentially look for are direct recommendations from you. So just starting off that section, do you read like any book recommendations, any book that you've gifted a lot?
Okay. I don't gift books a lot. I do read, again, not a lot nowadays, but some of the favorites would be definitely 0 to 1. Read it in the initial days and completely, you know, change the perspective. Right now, you know, this book about negotiation. I'm missing the name.
Never split the difference.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm really reading it slow. So, you know, so that I can start implementing that also. Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow is again a good book. Yeah, I think these three.
Top three investments you've made. It could be monetary. It could be, you know, investing in a person or like making a decision that has made you better.
Even habits.
I think getting into DJ Sanghvi was a good investment because I met, you know, my co-founders there. Starting Yokit, of course, putting 10 years into it has been a great decision. Not just for me, but no, I should not be saying this, but you know, for a lot of people who have been really helped by that. Third, I think meeting my wife.
Nice.
Is she from DJ too?
No. She's not from engineering background.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Tumal, to be on for being on the show with us and sharing your wisdom, your journey, and telling us about both your startups. This has been a delightful conversation.